was pushing weight when I was high school. When I was 16, 17 years old, I was selling hundreds of pills of ecstasy in a rave, and I was making anywhere from, like, you know, literally $3,000 to $15,000 a night at 16, 17 years old. Wow. Then when I was 18 years old, I was working for nightclubs and I was importing 10,000 pills of ecstasy from Amsterdam, going through a flight route with four different countries to evade Interpol. Crazy shit.
Welcome everyone to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. I am here with Sean V. Bradley. Sean, brother, what's up, man? How are you today?
Man, I am doing great, man. I'm on top of the world right now. I'm feeling good.
Dude, I'm excited to have you. You're looking good, by the way. And Sean, man, president, dealer synergy, co-founder at Internet Sales 20 Group, best-selling author of Googleopoly, radio talk show host at Against All Odds Radio Show, star of Vice TV's hit show, I Was a Teenage Felon, and ultimately a cool guy. Let's start with Vice TV, because, brother, I just watched it last night. Say something so the camera goes on you and we can see that.
Yeah, so this is Sean B. Bradley. I'm just kind of showing you my iPhone 13 case right there. So yeah, I'm kind of loving this whole TV show stuff. It's crazy, surreal.
Bro, you went from candy flipping to multimillionaire car trainer. Like, what's up, man? You give us a start. Who's Sean Bradley? Tell us a little bit about your history, man.
Oh man, the history, it's definitely surreal. It's not your average success story. So I grew up in Queens, in Brooklyn, New York. Violence, poverty, neglect, mental craziness from my parents, and tortured. You know, like my stepdad in the show, they talk about, he used to torture me and my mother. I had to have like the NYPD's SWAT team, which is called Emergency Services Unit, not Special Victims Unit, but ESU is the Emergency Service Unit, which is SWAT. They had to come in and extract us from the house because this dude was going to kill us. He threatened to throw me off a bridge. He used to shoot my mother up with heroin, chain her to the bed. Yeah, that was just, he was a psychopath. So I grew up like that. I was always, you know, in trouble as a kid. Like the show says, at 6 years old, I started doing cons. I was in New York and they give you public transportation to get to school. So I would jump on the train to go to a separate town, you know, like another, you know, area. And I would sell candy from a catalog that was expired and just keep all the money. That graduated from, you know, that to selling little bits of drugs here and there, to that graduating to starting to push more drugs. But then I got involved in crazy stuff, man. I used to sell bulletproof vests. Mm-hmm. To crack deals in Queens, cloned cell phones, credit cards, stolen merchandise, anything that I could get my hands on. New York life, Brooklyn life, and Queens life is a little bit different than mainstream America. So yeah, it was kind of crazy as a kid, man.
Dude, and you're in high school. You're talking about high school, right?
No, I'm talking about, brother, no, I'm talking about before high school. I'm talking about like when I was in middle school. Like, I remember I was in a boys' home from 12 to 15. So 12, 14, 15, I was in a boys' home for 3 years in a state facility, which, you know, some days it was like ladder year school. I mean, like, they used to run and tackle us and put us into 3-point restraints, you know, and like, you know, it was nuts, man. It was real crazy. I went from that to when I was a teenager, when I was in high school. No, I was pushing weight when I was high school. When I was 16, 17 years old, I was selling hundreds of pills of ecstasy in a rave. And I was making anywhere from like, you know, literally $3,000 to $15,000 a night at 16, 17 years old. Wow. When I was 18 years old, I was working for nightclubs and I was importing 10,000 pills of ecstasy from Amsterdam, going through a flight route with four different countries to evade Interpol. Crazy shit.
Dude, and listen, guys, anyone listening, I was a teenage felon, Vice TV. You were the finale episode. That's a compliment in itself with all the great episodes that they had you last. And listen, everyone, I paid $1.99 on Amazon Prime to go watch it. You can go watch that. We don't have to go over everything that was in that because people are going to watch that show. Is there anything that Vice TV really missed? Is there something that they did disservice on or things there? You tell me.
And I'm glad that I appreciate you asking. So to go over a couple things is that I am actually in multiple books and in several movies, but I never authorize any of that stuff. And so it's not the real picture and it's not the real version of stuff. So I'm not even going to get into what they are, but I'm in a major movie that was in the movie theaters and was on Showtime and HBO. And that has to do with my case. But they asked me to be in it and I didn't want to because I'm not a sucker. Like I'm not going to turn around and be somebody's jump off, you know what I mean? And let you make all your money on your stuff and you're not going to give me my side of the take. So what I really liked about Vice is Vice approached me, first of all. They came to me, they hunted me down, they found me and they signed me to their show, which was kind of cool. But what I liked about Vice is they're true crime. So it's not fiction. I mean, there's a difference. HBO and Showtime and Netflix, that's that type of stuff. Vice is, they cover the news, they cover the war and things like that. So they have to validate through court records and other, you know, ways that what they're being told is real because it's a news agency, Vice News. And the other reason why I like them is they're about prison reform. They're about redemption. They're about evolution. And yes, it's sensational. My story, Secret Service, DEA, Italian, Russian, organized crime, international drug smuggling, celebrities. It's pretty exciting. But what I loved about Vice is that they were able to, you know, not only talk about that, but then talk about the evolution and what I'm doing now. Because that's what I care about is my life now. But in all fairness, they did an hour episode on my life, but after you take the commercials out, it's only 44 minutes. It's hard as hell to pack an entire life, especially at my level, into 44 minutes. So yes, to answer your first question, a bunch of things that they missed. I'm involved in gangs, real serious gangs, you know, like, so the organization I'm with is called TF, you know, Together Forever. That's why you ever see the pictures. That's the T and that's the F, you know what I mean? So we didn't get a chance to go into it because like they told a bunch of stories in the TV show, but we don't want to confuse the audience. And then it's like, okay, wait a minute, get it there. So they didn't really go into the gang stuff, the real serious gang stuff that's there. I'm trying to get, you know what I mean? Like, there you go. So the real serious gang stuff, and I'm covered in tattoos all over my body and stuff.
Yeah. Listen, guys, if you're listening to the audio, go to the show notes, watch the video. You need to see this. Sean, keep going.
Yeah, no, thank you. And so I got involved seriously in Italian and Russian organized crime. So this didn't get flushed out. I was at Rider University. So they talk about the show, how I enlisted in the army. I enlisted in 11 Bravo, which is airborne infantry. So I was going to jump out of airplanes out of the 82nd Airborne. But when I was freaking 17 years old, I joined the army. I had to get signed. I was with a bunch of ravers and skaters. We're in a warehouse and one of these knuckleheads knocked down the bonfire and burnt the place down. Nobody got hurt. And I wound up, you know, not getting, you know, convicted with anything, but I lost my ship date. And so they talk about me going to Ryder, but what they didn't talk about is that when I went to Ryder, I actually joined the ROTC. So I was in the Reserve Officer Training Corps. And so I couldn't be enlisted anymore, which is stupid, but I could be a freaking officer. I was a Russian major. And here's what's missed is that I have my mind works a little bit differently. When I was in high school, a lot of people don't know this, I was a Japanese student. You know, I mean, like I studied Japanese, that my high school, which is weird, offered Japanese. I could read and write two out of the three alphabets, which is hiragana and katakana. And I still could hold, you know, a couple minute conversation in Japanese just for shits and giggles. Like, let's just say, doko kara irashaimashita ka? Where are you from? New York kara kamashita. I'm from New York. Hajimemashite. You know what I mean? Like, so I learned a lot of Japanese. I wasn't able to do the kanji, which is the Chinese characters, but man, I was pretty badass for a kid.
Yes, sir.
And yeah, and when I went to Rider, I started out as a political science major because I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. Literally after 3 days, I changed my major. I was like, this is not for me. This sucks. And then I wanted to go. I love Japanese, but unfortunately, Rider didn't offer Japanese. And they didn't even offer any other languages that had a different alphabet except Russian. So the only reason why I chose Russian, no reason, I'm not Russian in any way, shape, or form, is because I wanted to challenge myself and I wanted a different alphabet. I didn't want to have German, Spanish, or French, or Italian. And so in Russian, they have this Cyrillic alphabet, which is like off of the Greek alphabet and, you know, the traditional English alphabet. And that was interesting. So I learned at the university how to read and write Russian fluently. So, ya govoru po-rusky, you know, ochen horosho, you know what I mean? And I could just go on a little bit further. It's been a little bit while, but I can read and write it better now than I speak it. So when I'm in federal prison, I'm in MDC Brooklyn Federal Prison, and I have ties, real serious ties with Italians from Bensonhurst, but I speak Russian. And I understand the Russian culture really well. So I was like the liaison at 19 years old between the Italian gangsters and the Russian gangsters in prison. And matter of fact, you Google this. If you Google and type in Operation Badfellas, MDC Brooklyn, you're going to laugh. You heard of the movie Goodfellas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1997, I believe it's 1997. In 1997, I was at MDC Federal Prison in Brooklyn. And I can't even make this shit up. The Department of Justice, Office of Inspector General, which is like the federal version of Internal Affairs, did a massive sting operation on MDC Brooklyn. They arrested like 14 correction officers and unit managers. Why? Because we were getting cell phones, vodka, wine, steaks. We didn't get lobster. Everything else that you saw in Goodfellas, we had that was there.
Wow.
And I was like caught up in the middle of that stuff. And in prison, man, you know, they talk about a couple of the businesses that I was doing. Like I was making a lot of money in prison. You know, one of my hustles was the credit card scams that I was doing from federal custody. I was popping the phone lines, getting credit cards. And with the credit cards, I wasn't stupid. I wasn't buying expensive shit. That's what gets people in trouble. I was buying like flowers, but I was making good prison money with that. And then with the money I was making, I was putting it into my commissary. So I would buy all this shit from the commissary. And if you wanted like, you know, a soup, you got to give me two soups, you know, when commissary comes. You want a candy bar, give me two candy, and so on and so forth. So I had my money working for me, you know what I mean, as I was in jail. I got involved in a lot of crazy stuff in prison, you know, like gang stuff, you know what I mean? You know, shit got real at times. And, but I met some amazing people there. So what's not talked about on this TV show, but I talk about on my radio show, is I met a guy named Vladimir. Okay, there's a lot of Vladimirs in Russia, but, and his name's Vladimir Topko. So if you Google him, Vladimir Topko, T-O-P-K-O, my dude is one of the highest ranking Russian organized crime people ever step foot in American soil. Wow. His co-defendant is Neponchik Ivankov, okay? He's the Lucky Luciano, the godfather of this shit. They assassinated him in Moscow after he got out. He did like 10 years in Siberian prison. So I become really good friends with him. I'm 19 years old, he's like 34 years old. And like, you know, I learned more Russian from these guys than I did at Rider University. And we got really tight. And it's funny, ironically, this guy was one of the most positive influences I ever had. He was saying to me, my God, you're 19 years old, you shouldn't be here. And I'm a street kid. Like I'm playing some gangster shit on the street and street hustling stuff. I never knew about like, you know, macroeconomics and global trade and civilian stuff like that. I'm looking at bulletproof vests and I'm looking at like things like that. And he's exposing me to a higher level of thinking. See, because people are confused, Russian organized crime isn't like what we think about here. Most people in Russian organized crime are former politicians or government employees, like from the FSB or the KGB or things like that. You know what I mean? And so this guy he was a former card-carrying member of the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. He served under two Soviet presidents. He's got a PhD in macro economics. That's who this guy was. And so I learned a lot. And when I got out of prison, he invited me to Russia. So I've taken six trips to Russia from 2001 to 2007. And my dude, I have a story. If you go to my againstthelodgeradioshow.com or you go to there, you go to my radio show, if you scroll through, I interviewed the CEO of a billion-dollar company called Kasasa. It's a billion-dollar banking company. The CEO's name's Gabriel Kratchik. Gabriel's been a friend of mine for many years. When he was the CEO of a different company in the automotive industry, I took him with me to Russia for almost 2 weeks. So I don't even tell the story on the air.
Right.
The CEO of a current billion-dollar company,
right,
old money Louisiana white boy, right, from a billion-dollar company, tells a story. When I took him to Moscow, Russia in 2006, we get picked up by my people and a security detail, KGB agents, this type of shit like that. Man, it's crazy stuff. I've never seen anything like this in my life. The way we moved in Russia, he tells a story. Like, you know, like my people press the police over there. You know, see, the police over there in Russia, they have the militia, which is like basic police. They're like a joke. Then you have the Oman. The Oman is the state police. They're no joke. They're serious people. And then you have the FSB, and which is the like the federal agencies. They have, you know, like there's like the FBI and then there's like the CIA. They have those type of things where it's internal and external type stuff. And these people are really serious. So it's kind of crazy, my life, you know, with these people. So that wasn't talked about. A couple of things that weren't talked about is my wife, Karina. I don't know if you know this, but my wife's was a major recording artist. She's got over 65 million views. She's got 11 major music videos. She's got tracks with Meek Mill, Papoose, Remy Ma, and a myriad of other people. So we didn't have a chance to even talk about that, like how I got hooked up, you know, with all these major, like, you know, like serious gangster rappers and stuff like that, and how my wife got into that whole world. And that wasn't even to be able to touch. Then from there, you know, like all
real
the other
quick, real quick, okay. Sean, how'd you meet your wife, man?
Oh, you're gonna laugh. You ready for this?
Yeah, dude.
I'm an internet pimp, baby. I met her on Match.com.
Hey. You know,
for real, like, because I was busy. You know what's so funny? People tell me, that you guys should be the Match.com spokespeople because we've been together for 15 years and we're a power couple. But yeah, man, I met her on Match.com because I had my company for 3 years when I first met her, and I'm ripping and running, traveling all over the place. I didn't have time for bum ass people. You know what I mean? Like, it's nothing worse than being so busy going on a date and you're like, oh my God, what am I doing here with this chick? You know? Or so for me, it was like a screening process. I was able to kind of vet potential dates and everything like that. So I met her on Match.com about 15 years ago and never looked back.
Brother, man, you guys should have a series together, more than just a 45-minute episode, right?
There's a movie coming. So just to let you know, I'm very blessed. Mm-hmm. What's happening is that there was two seasons. There's 10 episodes in both seasons. And I was told by numerous people from Vice, producers and corporate people, that by far my story and my episode is the best one out of all 20. And not to take anything away from everybody else, but there's nobody that's been in the last 20 episodes. You could watch it yourself. That was as deep as I was in certain things, and damn sure not at the level I'm at now. I mean, like, you know, like I made almost $50 million in personal income that's verified. You know, I mean, I'm a best-selling author. I'm a CSP in the National Speakers Association, a radio show host, all this other stuff. So what they liked is how deep I was and then how high I am now. But the other aspect is I'm trained. I'm a Franklin Covey certified trainer and facilitator. I'm a trained communicator. I'm a trained interviewer and talk show host. And I'm also a trained professional speaker. So there's some people that have good stories, but if you watch the episodes, they're not very skilled in tone and inflection and body language and,
and
energy and humor and things like that. So for them, they were like, holy shit, this guy is like, you know, and that's why they made me the season finale, because I've got multiple moving, you know, parts that makes the episode phenomenal.
Well, anyone listening knows. I mean, they can judge you or not. You're clearly a brilliant guy. You're clearly very smart. You're not just a gangster on the street speaking multiple languages, hustling at a very young age. You're a go-getter. Were you born with this energy? Yes. Were you born with this drive?
Yeah, listen to me. It's so funny when I say this, but it's true. I remember being a little kid and telling people, this is why people hated me, part of the reason why, when I was a kid, I tell people, I'm in the hood, I'm in the project, so I'm like, I'm destined for greatness. And they look at me like, man, shut up, man.
Muhammad Ali over here.
No, I was in federal prison, and I'm telling people, for years, I knew that I'm going to tell my story to the world. I knew, I said, and I had a corny name for it because I was young and stupid. It's like 20 years ago. I said, I'm going to write a book called No, No, Really, That Is My Life. I bought the URL 15 years ago, No, No, Really, That Is My Life. And I own that URL, and I still own that URL. I'm not going to use it. But I knew back then that I was destined. And it's not just the money part, but I was destined to do more, be more, and achieve more. And I get that question a lot. But yeah, I don't know how to explain it. But I knew that I had way more potential than being in the projects, in the hood, and being in gangs, and being all this other stuff. I don't know. Somehow the stork got confused, like in that in Boss Baby type situation, and I got dropped in the hood. I was like, yo, you need to come get my ass because this is not where I should be. That's what happened.
You get out of jail, you get out of prison. Mm-hmm. How does it feel?
I cannot describe it, except it was surreal. On a couple different, you know what, this, I'm surprised nobody's asked me that question before, you know, but that's a beautiful question because it was different in different ways. First and foremost, my instinct, it was, thank God, I'm finally out. I'm out. You know what I mean? Because I was 19 years old. I'm a young man. I used to run VIP parties for models and celebrities in New York City. I was a club kid, raver, you know, drug dealer supplier. I'm the plug. And here I am in prison in my prime. So I'm a young man and I'm like, oh, I need to get out of here. So there's that, right? Then there's stress because, and this is going to sound so stupid, but I went to prison in May of 1996 and I came home in May of 1999. And guys, ladies, I can't explain this, but just try to listen to what I'm about to say to you. It was the weirdest thing because it was like I was in a timeout because I left at the same month and the same part of the year, but it's 3 years later. That means the styles changed. The clothes that I was wearing were out of style, you know? But for everybody else, life had went on. But for 3 years, I was put into a kindergarten timeout, metaphorically speaking. And I was in a little timeout type thing. But so I felt awkward and I felt a little bit stressed out that, you know, I didn't have anything. I was relieved, and I remember my first job was working as a deli boy at Food Town, and that lasted for a couple weeks where I was good. After a couple weeks, then I was like, oh, this is ain't for me. Like I'm on some sucker shit right now. Like I can't work and sling ham and cheese. Like I need to get put back together.
Right.
Going back to New York.
Yeah. So let's talk about that evolution then. Like what was that taking off point? Like that tipping point where you're like, Sean's back. I'm on fire, and I'm on fire going in a direction that I'm going to be able to tell my children about, family about, that I'm going to love and respect myself. When did you realize that you were on to something better? A little bit about that tipping point.
Yeah, I would say that that's weird to explain because my whole life, if you watch the show, there's a theme, young and stupid. That was the theme. As an adult, I look at that episode and I cringe. I'm like, what was I thinking? I mean, if you believe in God, God was probably like, dude, like how many times can I save your ass? How many times can I keep you out of jail? How many times, Sean Bradley, right? And I was just young and stupid and on a lot of drugs that I didn't pay attention. So something happened to me when I came home. And after the deli boy thing wore off and I went back to Brooklyn and I re-up and I started a drug operation in Cumberland Farms, something came over me. And I say in the show, I don't know if it was God or the universe or dumb luck, but for the first time in my life, I felt touchable, meaning I felt that if I don't get my shit together, I'm going to get locked up and I'm going to get caught in that trap of repeat offenders and recidivate and things like that. So something weird happened. Again, call it God, call it the universe, call it whatever. Sean Bradley's grown up, but I felt something I can't describe inside of me saying, stop this shit. And nothing happened. I just literally one day decided I'm getting the fuck out of here. And I packed up my little shit. I had a backpack, a Walkman, $1,000 cash, a hoodie, and I left and I moved in to, I looked at a room and they didn't say this in the show because I didn't want to confuse people, but it said that I rented a room for $500. No. I got played out. The ad set a room for $500. It turned out to be a couch. I rented a couch. I didn't even have a fucking room. It was a one bedroom place, and then they had a couch in the living room. I rented a couch for $500 in Red Bank, New Jersey, and I became a waiter. And so I was a waiter for like a month and a half, but I sucked at waiting, you know, so I got fired like five or six times. And my friend told me I should start selling cars. And even when I worked at the car dealership, my first thought was, man, you know what? I don't know if this shit's going to work out or not, but if it doesn't, I could just go back to selling bulletproof vests, drugs, whatever it is, you know, guns, whatever. I could turn around and I'll eat. But then it was like a fish to water, man. I felt in my natural habitat. I killed it. Salesman of the month, salesman of the year. I was making money. And then I can't pinpoint when it was, but there was a time where I stopped thinking, hey, you know, if this doesn't work, because it was working and it just stayed working. I will say to the audience that I'm not proud of this, but I didn't use not one day in prison, not one day in the boys' home to better myself or what have you. When I was in the hole, I was in the hole several different times. One time I did 30 plus days straight in the hole, and I would read 450 to 500 page books in one day. I mean, think about it. If you got nothing to do for 14 straight hours, you could finish a book. You know what I'm saying? So, but it wasn't a book about Seven Habits or Win Friends, Influence People. I've read Stephen King novels and Tom Clancy and Piers Anthony and just fiction shit, Anne Rice. I didn't use any of the time there. I wish I used it to get jacked up. I didn't use it. The weight pile. You know what I did the whole 3 years? Make connections. I met people from Medellin cartels. I was trying. It was like me going to like Yale, Harvard of gangsters and I mean, think about it. It's the federal prison. And so that's what I did. And so thank God, even though I was young and stupid and didn't use my time wisely, I did learn one thing, and they put it in a TV show. The one thing I learned from prison is people, places, and things, which means that if you want to change, you need to change three things. You need to change the people that you surround yourself with, the places you go, and the things that you do. If you change the people you surround yourself with, if you change the things that you're doing, and you change the places that you go, you'll be able to do more, be more, and achieve more, period.
People, places, and things. I love it. I mean, you obviously have a gift for making connections. When secret sauce, selling drugs is the secret sauce. You really don't have to be that good at it to hustle drugs. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but they sell themselves. But then you built a multimillion company. You're a writer. You're a host. You are a man who can make connections. Now, a lot of people, we're going to go back to like first grade. A lot of people are wondering, like, I don't have that fire. I don't have that drive. Where do I start? Where should someone start if they want to turbocharge, meet the right people, be in the right place, seek the right things? Ultimately, like, where should they start? Do you have any like beginner tips for people?
Yes. And before I give that to you, I need to set the stage for this.
Please. Okay.
So I have the perfect answer, I think, for me to answer your question, but I want to set the stage for this. I have a unique background because of street stuff, right? So I have street smarts. I've got common sense. I've got survival skills. I got street survival skills. I got prison survival skills. You know what I mean? Like, so I've got that in me. But then I'm classically professionally trained. I am, you know, at the highest levels in the world in the National Speakers Association. I'm a CSP in the Million Dollar Speakers Group. I have been trained by some of the top people in the world. Like, you know, and it doesn't matter. I could go through the list of stuff, but NSA, Franklin Covey, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Toastmasters. I've done a tremendous amount of self-education and just trial and error and experience. And I have, as you mentioned, a vast, vast network of different amazing people with subject matter expertise. So now that I've kind of set the stage, here's my opinion. My opinion is this. It is, respectfully, mindset first. It's the chicken or the egg. And so I believe that if somebody is really not motivated or they don't want something bad enough, right, then it's never going to manifest. This interview is not going to help you. You're never going to do shit. I think it was John F. Kennedy that said that that if somebody is willing to give up their life, you know what I mean, to assassinate the president, than any president could get assassinated. So if a person is willing to say that that's my target, the president, and they're willing to give up their life, then that president is legitimately a target. You know what I mean? Like a viable target, because somebody's willing to give up their life in the pursuit of accomplishing that goal. That's freaking dedication. That's commitment. And I'm not saying that's positive commitment, but my point that I'm trying to build here is that when your beliefs, think of these terrorists, these Islamic jihadists, right? I mean, that's fucking dedication. And I don't know if I could curse on your show or not, but I mean, strap a bomb on yourself and blow your shit up and a bunch of kids and women and civilians and stuff like that, you got to be a dedicated person committed to your cause to like, ah, la, 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 and boom, you know, you're done. I mean, like, if you think about it, right? So that's what you need. You need conviction. You need commitment. E.T. Eric Thomas says in that video, breathe. When you want success just as bad as you want to breathe, not kind of like it, but seriously, go underwater and hold your breath until you can't come up anymore. And when you think you're about to come up, have somebody hold you down for another 30 seconds and you're desperate, choking for air. When you want to breathe that bad, when you want success that bad, then maybe you have a shot to be successful. See, my whole entire life, I wanted to be successful bad. I wanted to be better, different, more than what I had so bad. So I would say the first place you got to turn around and do is work on your mindset. When you talk to, when you look at, I don't watch any of these famous people on TV anymore because it's the same shit. I don't care if it's sports, actors, writers, musicians, whatever it is, celebrities. What's the same common message? I'll tell you, it's the same shit. I believed in myself when nobody else did. I worked my ass off, blah, blah, blah. That's the same shit. That's the formula. But when your why becomes more than the how or the what, then you're going to be successful. So I say that if you're not there yet, you need to find your why. You know what I mean? Like, why do you want this? I want to be rich. Well, why? I don't know, because it's probably better than being poor. Not good enough. When you turn around and clearly understand what you want, why you want it, and that is a conflagration. It's a large destructive fire in your soul. That is going to be the fuel that you're going to need to persevere through the bullshit you're going to engage with. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think you're saying something that's next level, Sean. And what I mean by that, I've been through this where I can study Stephen Covey. I can learn the habits. I can go and rationally go through all these things and learn, oh, say, call Sean by his name and do this. Or I can learn these tactics, but if my why's not big enough, if my mindset's not strong, it's like the next level. When I was a kid, I was always trying to figure out how can I be better. What I've realized is I don't have to do anything to be better, right? It's already within me. I just need to unleash that power and unleash it. And that's something that you just have, you have a knack for. You've been unleashing it your whole life, which is very inspirational. I want to digress a little bit to the tactics, though, because certain things have to be tactical. They have to be tactical. Googleopoly. You don't show up first on Google unless you're paying $10,000 a month on pay-per-click. And honestly, do you really want to spend that kind of money? Maybe you do, actually. It depends on the situation. But you're not coming up first on Google just because you set up a Google My Business page. Just right. Because you set up a website. Just because you have a blog doesn't mean you rank. So obviously, we can't get into all the tactics and everything about Google. But give us like just a little piece for my niece, a little bit about Google, Googleopoly, and the message in that book. Take your time.
I will in a second, but I want to finish the last thought here.
Yes, sir, brother. Go.
Okay, the number one book that I've read, okay, by far that helped mold me into Sean V. Bradley, the eight-figure entrepreneur that I am, right, is this, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Dr. Stephen Covey is freaking brilliant, and I had the honor to be able to, you know, train under him and learn from him directly, you know, through multiple seminars. Like, I wasn't like a student officially, but I've been to workshops. I got to meet the man and learn from him, hear from him himself, not just an audio or a book. And what Covey says with the whole 7 habits, this is the concept, is that there's 3 maturity levels. He calls it the maturity continuum. You have the most of the people on this planet, unfortunately, are dependent or codependent. Let me explain. You make me feel the ambulance. You know what I mean? People that blame other people for their mediocrity and their bullshit life and existence. It's the weather, it's the COVID, it's this, it's that. Okay. Now the next level, and this is taxicab confessions, is the independent. That's where I was. I've been independent since I've been on the street. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need anybody. I'm me. I'm Sean B. Bradley. I'm SVB. I got this. I was successful. I was successful on the street. I was successful, you know, when I was selling cars, I was in the automotive industry, but I never broke through to this next level shit, right? But I learned as I grew and I matured and I became wiser, more experienced, that there's something powerful called interdependence. Interdependence is about collaboration, about synergy, about us and we. Because with synergy, it is incredible. I'll give an example. You know, Ben, you are successful with or without me. I don't know your whole background, but if you're in marketing, you have knowledge, you've got experience, and you're good. Without Sean Bradley, you have your own show, you got your own this, your own that, and so you're successful. Brother, with or without you, Sean B. Bradley is successful. I'm rich, you know what I mean? Like, I'm good. But when you put a Sean and a Ben together, and if we collaborate together and we synergize together and we build synergy together, I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to say this to your audience. You will never be as successful by yourself without Sean Bradley, but it's reverse. I, Sean Bradley, will never be as successful without Ben, you know, and me, because I don't have your mind, your experiences, your energy, your synergy. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it goes into what you said before, the musicians, the athletes, all the best of the best. You interview Tom Brady, he's not talking about his pecs. He's talking about his teammates and the synergy with his team. He's operating. He's Sean V. Bradley, right? You have a team, right? Tell me about your team. Tell me about building a team at Dealer Synergy.
Here's the thing is that, again, just got to be transparent with you. I've owned this company for almost 18 years. April will be 18 years. So I'm a little over 17 and a half years. April 13, 2004, I incorporated this eight-figure business, right? And I was young and stupid. I was in the independent mindset. I remember when I first started a company, I was like, this is my way. I'm the owner of this company. I'm Sean Bradley. Blah, blah, blah. And I was burning through employees, man. Like, I was burning through employees and I didn't realize about like client retention, employee satisfaction, all that stuff. Once I got introduced to Covey and I got introduced to a couple other things, we started to develop in the team. And so for the second half of my company, for the last, you know, 8-9 years, we have really developed an amazing team. So first of all, my wife, the retired pop star, is the CEO of the company. She's got 14 years, you know, accounting background at a CFO, you know, surgical level. She's a time maximization expert. She's in the NSA as well. She's also NASM certified. She's a Franklin Covey, you know, gurette. She's badass. You know, she's the CEO of the company. Then we have LA Williams, my co-host on the radio show. He's completely blind from North Philly. He's the only blind certified Pro Tools operator in the world. He's a producer, major producer. He's got tracks, you know, Dr. Dre, Lil Wayne, Katy Perry, Beyonce, Nas, LL Cool J. Yeah, like major legends he's got. He's like a Ray Charles, a Stevie Wonder. This dude is the vice president of my company. Okay, he's been with me for 15 years now. Then we have Joe Kalitz. He's my director of operations. 12 years automotive experience, GSM. He's a combat war veteran from the 82nd Airborne. He's a freaking combat veteran, war veteran, master's degree in business. This is the dude that runs my operations. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we have, you know, LA's wife is, you know, the head of HR. Her name is Naima. One of my closest friends for almost 30 years, my co-host co-star in the show, Billy V, mm-hmm. my friend in the Vice show, his wife is here. Billy worked for me like a bunch of times. I fired him like 4 times. He's like my older brother. And he didn't talk to me for a little bit, but his wife.
Why'd you fire him, Sean?
It's like family shit. Like we drove each other crazy. And because, you know, part of it, he felt like he was entitled because I'm his younger brother and shit like that. So he didn't do all the stuff he's supposed to do. He didn't live up to my expectations because he was like, he was kind of coasting. But the point is, his wife has been with me for 7 straight years. So, and it's family. My daughter, after she spent 3 years selling cars, because I wouldn't let her come into my company until she had a lot of years experience on a dealership level. She's been with me for a year. So my daughter's got 4 years automotive experience, 3 years at dealership level. She's nationally recognized, OEM recognized. Now she works here. My daughter has a girlfriend. Her girlfriend works here in customer service. So I've created a company that are not only world-class trainers, consultants, and subject matter experts. The blood type is tested. some street gang shit, legal stuff. But I'm saying nothing illegal, but I'm saying it's like on the same principles about family, about organization, about synergy, interdependence. So my people are extremely tight. We work harder because we work for each other. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. You work harder because you work for each other.
100%.
Dude, I love it. Let's just go back to Google. I don't want to talk about Google for a freaking half hour. I got the book in my cart. Why should I click buy? Give me a little bit of a piece here. Give me a little tip.
I'll be honest with you. I wrote the book a lot of years ago. Okay. So, I still think, here's why. First of all, it's an international best-selling book. I'm signed to Wiley Publishing. So it's the number one business book publishing company in the United States. And my book is in so many different languages, which bugs me out, in Chinese, Cantonese, and all sorts of cool stuff. But even though I wrote the book in 2014, 2015, a lot of what I wrote is still biblical structure that's relevant today. One of the things that's really was way ahead of the time was chapter 5, video search engine optimization. So what Googleopoly is, it's a roadmap. It's a blueprint to understand Google and how to maximize Google. Because here's the bottom line, and a lot of people don't realize this, but you're in marketing, you understand it, is that you mentioned pay-per-click. I am not a fan of pay-per-click because only 6% of people are going to click pay-per-click ads, which means 94% of people are organic. And if you don't have a strong organic strategy to earn an index on the top 10, listings, it's superficial, and only about 5% of people go past the first page. So to me, the holy grail is page one Google on a SERP page. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Second thing is this, is that it's not enough, in my opinion, to show up just once. So most people, if you have a website, you're lucky if you show up one time on the first page of Google. But think about the monopoly. And that's why I call it Googleopoly, like monopoly. It's an analogy. You can't win by just having Boardwalk. I don't give a shit if it's the best property. You cannot win Monopoly with just Boardwalk. As a matter of fact, I challenge you, you can't win the majority of times if all you have is Boardwalk and Park Place and all the hotels. You need more real estate. So the concept of Googleopoly is, how do I generate Google real estate? How can I turn around and have, through on-site and off-site SEO, different Googleopoly metaphorical properties? So for example, if I'm Dealer Synergy, that's one thing. But then if I have Internet Sales 20 Group, AutomotiveInternetSales.com, if I have, press releases, images, Pinterest, Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram, like I was a teenage felon. I have so many different Google real estate pieces that I'm saturating my Googleopoly board, if that makes sense.
It does. I'm at a loss of words because I used to pitch search engine optimization basically the exact same way. Now, I'd show them a graphic of Moz. Moz has a graphic. Google's in the middle. And then there's Yahoo. And then there's AOL, even the small one. City Search, Local for You, things no one's ever heard of. But that's still real estate on the board.
Yes.
And that's still Google's competitor. So don't you want more real estate? And then don't you want your competitor to ultimately be recommending you? It's an algorithm. No freaking brainer that if you're diversified and you own every little piece of real estate on the board, that you're going to come up on Google.
But let me build on this.
Please,
so remember,
do.
I wrote this book in 2014. And
yeah.
So what I'm about to share with you, it was way ahead of the world, especially my automotive industry. So I used to specialize in a strategy called video search engine optimization, and I became very famous in my industry. I was known, I was accredited for creating video search for the automotive sales industry. So I conquested, and it's in my book, obviously 7 years later, it's not relevant anymore. But when I wrote the book, if you went to Google and typed in Toyota Corolla Torrance on the first page of Google, I made it a video of Scott Robinson Honda. So Toyota Manufacture is a multi-billion or trillion-dollar company or whatever. It's a freaking huge toy. It's Toyota, right? And so can you imagine in Toyota's backyard in California, in Torrance, if I typed in Toyota Corolla Torrance, first position natural Google was a video that said this. Hey, folks, I know you're looking at a Toyota Corolla. You should be looking at the Honda Civic. I know, again, don't take my word for it. IntelliChoice says that the Honda Civic is a better vehicle. That's called conquesting. You know how gangster that shit is? That when somebody turns around and is looking for the Toyota Corolla, I have manipulated the video so Honda Civic shows up and then sells you why the Honda Civic is better. Let me explain to you why. And since you understand this, watch how I flow. Okay, so what people don't understand is that video metaphorically has the same DNA as a website. Let's go through. A video has a URL, so does a website. A video has HTML code, so does a, you know, a website. A video has a title, so does a, you know, a website. A video has an anchor text, keyword density, backlinks, you know, keywords, so does a video. Yeah, you know, I mean, a website. And then everything that you, if you have a checklist box, H1s, H2s, titles, descriptions, backlinks, you know, alt tags, all that stuff that you have, geo-targeting and shit like that, all that you have to optimize a website, you could do on video. But guess what a video has that a regular website doesn't have? It has two things. And remember, I wrote this shit in 2014. Check the record, right? Video has the ability to have speech recognition, you know, technology. Right. And so, as you know, MP3 has MP3 metadata. And so what happens is that if I want my video to show up on the first page of Google, what you don't do is shoot a video and then optimize it. What you do is you begin with the end result in mind. So whether you're using WordTracker, you know, SEM Rush or Google keyword tracker tools, there's keyword forensics. If you turn around and figure out, like, through keyword forensics, what do you want to show up with keywords? Let's just say that I want to show up for, you know, 2022 Ford F-150 Philadelphia. Okay, great. So what I'm going to do is, besides all the traditional SEO, H1s, H2s, title, description, meta tags, boom, 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 I'm going to make sure that on an audio level, I'm going, whatever I want to index for, I want to make sure that I'm verbally saying those verbally things. Saying it. So I might say something, hey folks, I know that you're looking for a 2022 Ford F-150 in the Philadelphia or surrounding areas. Will you come to the right place? Ben Stock Ford, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so now that's going to add, you know, towards the SEO, you know, algorithm, it's going to, because that's in there. You know what I mean? They're going to have that audio MP3 data that's going to go towards the ranking. Now, in addition to that, there's the visual side of things. There's pattern recognition, or there's, you know, facial recognition. And so the same thing is that if I want to show up for the Ford F-150, I would make sure that there's a Ford logo or I'm next to a real Ford F-150, et cetera. So when you combined the traditional static SEO optimization, utilizing, you know, speech recognition optimization and facial or pattern recognition optimization strategies in conjunction or synergistically with the traditional, you have a competitive edge. And here's some facts. People prefer video more than anything else. People prefer watching video more than reading, writing, texting, communicating facts. Mm-hmm. The average American consumes over 8 hours of video per day. Second, Forrester Research says, Dr. McCree says that 1 minute of video is equivalent to 1.8 million written words because you have sight, sound, motion, and emotion. And on the search algorithms, if you have a video optimized and you have a website optimized, by far, it's going to be a lot faster to propagate and index a video. Why? Because if people prefer videos, the Google search engine algorithms favor video that's optimized the right way over static content. Would you agree with everything I just said?
Dude, I'm thinking that's going to be a video short right there. Boom, Sean Bradley dropping knowledge. So a lot of people, first off, a lot of people are going to have to click rewind and take some notes, but a lot of people are overwhelmed. They're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to do this stuff. Do you only work with...
Ben, I want to do something real quick. Can I redirect?
Yeah, please.
I haven't done this for somebody else's show. I've done this on my show before. Okay, so you've ever watched 8 Mile, right? You watched 8 Mile?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Eminem, like battle rapping. Mm-hmm. Bro, most people don't know this. You said you want to do stuff that people don't know. Everything I do is freestyle, okay? Mm-hmm. I have 7,000 videos that are, I have like 9 YouTube channels, but my main one is Sean B. Bradley TV. I have over 5 million views off of that one channel. I have a Lightspeed from Bradley, a Lightspeed training. I have the largest Lightspeed platform in the world with, again, another 7,000 paid videos, $6 million there. Every piece of content I have is freestyle off the top. I don't write speeches or whatever. My PowerPoints are usually overdue, late, and I just do them at the last minute. So here's what I want to do is, mm-hmm, I want you to pick a subject because I want to just kind of show your audience something. I don't care what it is. We didn't rehearse this. Again, anything, digital marketing, automotive sales, anything. Come up with the subject and let's just freestyle. Let's go. Let's do like rapid real quick. Pick subjects. Like we're doing a cipher.
Dude, I'm a personal trainer. I just started my own gym.
Okay.
What am I supposed to do? I know everything about the mind, the body, the spirit. I know it, but I've never been a business owner on my own, dude. I just started a personal gym. What do I do?
Okay, really simple. I need to qualify you, ask a couple questions. So you actually have a physical brick and mortar facility?
Yes, it's small, but it's going to be enough.
I didn't ask all that. It doesn't matter if it's small or it's tall or large or small, you know, and again, but you have a physical location. And what are the services? Do you have equipment in there? Do you teach classes? What is it that you do?
I want to teach a lot of classes. I have plenty of equipment in there. We do CrossFit, but I want to teach classes. I want people in monthly. I want them paying for the classes. I want regulars. I want a community.
Okay. Here's what I would say. One of the first thing is you need to position yourself locally and on the internet as the subject matter expert for fitness and for training and stuff like that. So how do you do that? I would create a Facebook group. I would create possibly a LinkedIn group. I would create a Clubhouse club that's going to be on whatever. Okay. So what do you specialize in the most? And my wife is NASM certified, by the way, National Academy of Sports Medicine. And I've been training martial arts for 35 years, 15 years in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So I have a little understanding. I go to personal trainer 3 times a week. So let's rock. What are you the best at? Is it the nutrition? Is it the classes? What are you great at yourself?
So I ask questions for a living. So what I am good at is finding a plan that suits that an individual person's need. I've got a great network, so I can recommend people. But I am that guy that they can come to me with their problems and I can answer their questions and I can find the right person.
Too general for me. Niche.
I'm a nutritionist.
There you go. Boom.
I'm a nutritionist and I love keto.
All right. So then here's what I would do then. I would turn around and create a group and start to create a community. And here's why. When I got signed to Wiley, it's not the New York Times best written author. It's the New York Times best selling author. They don't give a shit if I could spell or not. Can I sell books? God damn it. That's what it's about. Do I have an audience? My wife, for record deals and stuff like that, it's not if you're pretty, you can sing or dance or shake your ass. Will motherfuckers buy your records? Will they stream your shit? Will they go to your conferences? So what I would say is you need to build an audience. You need to build a tribe. Seth Godin wrote a book called Tribes. And what I would do is I would start a tribe. And again, and whether it starts out with only one person or 3 people in there, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to talk about your nutrition. You're going to come up with, you know, daily programs, workouts, etc. And if you've got a brick and mortar facility, what I would do is I would bundle it in. All the people that are part of your gym or your facility, part of the value package is that they're part of this community at no charge. They're part of this Facebook group. They're part of these weekly webinars, etc. And what you want to be able to do is just provide content. Because you got to remember, most people don't buy shit. They surf and they research. I'm going to repeat that. Most people don't buy shit. They spend the majority of their time on the internet researching, voyeuring, or just consuming content. So what you want to do is create content that you are on somebody's radar. So they're going to want to come back to your Instagram. They're going to want to come back to your Facebook. They're going to want to come back to what you do. And then you plant a little piece of that. It's like social media. They say that, you know, on social media, at one point it was like the 80-20 rule, meaning that 80% of it should just be social and only 20% of it should be like ads or CTAs, call to action. Same thing with this, is that you want to develop a community, a tribe where people are constantly coming back. They fucking love you because you're smart and you're giving them like nuggets, tips, and advice. So if you build your tribe, if you build your audience, you could sell them whatever you want to sell them.
So I don't have a car dealership. Is there still materials for me? Does your trainings, do you train just about anybody? Does your Lightspeed virtual training train just about anybody? Where can the general audience go to learn more from you?
I'm not trying to be a dick on what I'm about to say is that my clients are multi-billion dollar organizations and multi-million dollar organizations. So again, my content is built for car dealerships and automotive professionals because I make millions and millions of dollars selling to businesses. So that's what I've been doing for 23 years is the automotive industry. So if you go to Bradley On Demand, you'll be able to, have my video on demand training, tracking, testing, certification, but it is for the automotive industry. That doesn't mean it's exclusive, but the analogies and the examples, can you get value from going there? Absolutely. But I will be building out because of the TV show, I'm going to be building out a general audience, like a Cardone or Tony Robbins type thing for the masses. But I'm making so much money right now, that's not my top priority. Is like, think about it. If my clients are multi-million dollar businesses, I'm not rushing so Bob Jones could turn around and buy my shit. It's not, it doesn't really motivate me, but I'll get to it eventually. But if somebody wants to learn from me, I would say that the radio show is one of the best places because it is for general practitioners. So it's called Against All Odds Radio Show. And how I got that. So Ben, this is to my point. I built the number one Facebook group in the entire automotive industry called the Millionaire Car Salesman Facebook group with about 22,000 members. Now, for somebody listening to this, you might not be impressed, but for it being hyper niche for automotive professionals, it's the number one as per Facebook says it's number one. I didn't say it. Facebook said it's number one. Mm-hmm. I have the number one podcast called the Millionaire Car Salesman Podcast with over 250,000 downloads. Again, maybe compared to Joe Rogan, it's not a lot, but for the automotive industry, it's fucking huge. And because I created the number one group and the number one podcast, iHeartRadio came to me and offered me a nationally syndicated slot. So I was in Los Angeles, Rochester, New York, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and Cleveland, Ohio for the first 6 months, for the first two quarters. But then when this TV show kicked off with Vice, I just couldn't do all the shit. So I didn't want to give up my radio show because I really loved it. So I dropped down to just one market, which is Washington, D.C., which is a top 10 market. So I'm on 104.7 FM on Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 in Washington, D.C., and then globally on the iHeart app. But at one point, man, I had 1.3 million Americans listening to my radio show on the weekends. And now I'm just in Washington, D.C. because the next part is the TV show is huge. We broke records with Vice and now the movie deal. We've been approached by several different huge entities and we're trying to decide if we want to do a live narrative movie, like a 2-hour movie with actors and shit playing this. But what I'm more interested is a series like Narcos. You know what I mean? Like that's going to be like actors and stuff like that based on my life between all the gangster shit, all the music industry stuff, all the corporate stuff. And then the third idea, this just got announced. I don't know if you saw this, but I was just, I know my assistant's saying that I got a hard stop. So I have a next phone call. Yeah, like
I know you do, but Sean, just so you know, I will not let you go without bringing up the foundation that you're building.
Please end there. Yes. So what I will say is this, the two things that I'm the most proud of in the world, and I'm going to start with one and then the absolute thing the most I'm going to close with is I don't ever forget where I come from. You know what I mean? I didn't remove any of my tattoos because I remember every time I wake up, I look in the mirror, who I am and where I come from, and I appreciate everything I have. So my wife and I started a foundation called Help Because You Can. We literally own helpbecauseyoucan.com. But I don't like that website. If you go to dealersynergy.com, that's our main website, dealersynergy.com. If you go to dealersynergy.com, under the about, you'll see there, it's going to say, help because you can. That's where we spent a lot of time fleshing out. We have literally not even, like, I haven't even tracked, because I didn't track for the first decade of my company. But in the last 8 years alone, we have done an incredible thing. We have personally. So I've raised more money than this, you know, from fundraisers, shit like that. But I'm saying, me personally, I've donated over $1 million to 47 different charities, and they're all listed on that page. And in addition to the 47 different charities, there's a bunch of individual people that hit me up because they need help or whatever. And I help because we can. My wife was homeless. She was 16 years old, pregnant, and a single mom. And she went from being, you know, homeless and a single mom at 16 years old to becoming a pop star with 65 million views. I went from prison, ex-convict, ex-gang member to becoming, you know, who I am. And so if me and my wife could do this, we want to help as many people as we can. So Help Because You Can is something that's dear in our hearts altruistically. The other thing I'm going to say that I'm the most proud of is that I grew up in violence, craziness. I got friends that are dead. I got friends that are doing life plus 30 in federal prison on racketeering RICO cases. So one of the things that I'm the absolute most proud of is that I broke the cycle of craziness. So I've been with my wife for 15 years. Her name is Karina. You know, her real name is Karen, but her stage name is Karina. Her nickname is Karina. So I call her Karina. But if you hear me talk Karen, I'm not cheating on my wife. The same person. But you know, Karen's got like really, they get a lot of shit right now. You know what I mean? With the name Karen all over the internet. So
great time to be a Karina. Yeah, great time to be
Karina. Definitely time to be Karina. So my wife, we've got four beautiful kids. We have a 8-year-old little boy named Xander. We got a 13, soon to be 14-year-old boy named little Sean. I call him the sequel, Sean V. Bradley, the sequel. We have a daughter who turns 21 on December 21. 23rd. Her name's Kalina. And then we have our oldest daughter who's going to be, who's 22. They'll be 23 in April. So I've got four beautiful kids that are kind, sweet, funny, healthy, and they're well adjusted. They're not snooty rich people at all, because that's not how we roll. Like, people are just people. Like, I like everybody equal and I hate everybody equally. Meaning, look, I don't give a fuck who you are, what you are. If you're a good person, I like with you. I fuck with you. If you're not a good person, I don't got time for you. And that's how my family is. And what I love and I'm honored is that I'm able to build this thing. And so I've got my family, my wife, my daughter, my other daughter's at a dealership getting trained. My nephew is in a dealership. My brother is just about to start at a dealership. So I'm putting people on from the hood, from the neighborhood. Yo, my brother got stabbed in his chest in New York and almost died a couple years ago. I just took him out of the streets and I'm putting him into this professional environment, you know, and that's what drives me, is that I want to help people do more, be more, and achieve more. Because if I could come from the depths of hell that I did and do the shit that I do, everybody has an opportunity. If you don't want to be a little bitch and play those self-pity party, and I'm not minimizing what you've been through, my G, but I've been through some shit. I've been in the cell with the World Trade Center bomber. That wasn't in there. So you could do it. Like, yes, in MCC Manhattan, this is a crazy story I'm going to end with right here. At one point, I wanted to kill myself because I was fresh to death. And I, at that time, I thought I was going to be doing like anywhere from like 15 to 20 years in the feds. And I didn't know what was going on. And I literally, I was in MCC, which is Manhattan facility for, it's like pretrial for the feds. Mm-hmm. I was in the hole. I got into a fight, which is not a big deal, but I'm in the hole, and they put me in with the World Trade Center bomber, like from 1993. If you Google it, it didn't just get blown up in 9/11. It got blown up before that. You know, like a truck bomb blew that shit up. Well, the dude that blew it up, he was in my cell. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? I'm on here some club raver ecstasy shit. They're going to put me to a real Al-Qaeda terrorist. If this is the worst the United States government can do besides execute me, is put me with the World Trade Center bomber, fuck it, let's go. I can do this. And that's what got me through my bid, is like, man, if they got this dude here and I'm here, man, let's go. Like, I can do this bid. And so that's my point. Think about what I just said. Ex-gang member, ex-convict, in the cell with the World Trade Center bomber to doing what I'm doing today. So I don't care what you've been through. If you decide that you want to do more, be more, and achieve more, if you feel that you're capable or you deserve more, let's go. That's how I feel.
Sean V. Brady, drop the mic, man. Drop the mic. You've been incredible. Thank you so much for coming on, dude. I know you're busy and over time. I'll let you go. And I'll talk to you soon, man.
It's an honor. Man. Thank you so much for having me on your show. Send me the link and the promo stuff, and I'll promote this as well. I appreciate you. And thank you, everybody out there. Follow me at Sean V. Bradley, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. Watch the show. I Was a Teenage Felon on Vice TV on demand and all streaming services. And again, I'm here to help. Just hit me up online and I'll see if I could, you know, do what I can to help you guys. Take care.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.